Thanks for tuning into Organic Matters. This is the portion of the show where I sort of do what I call my organic matter factoids. I find them from everywhere. I bounce around. It's just things that I think people ought to know that most of us don't take time to educate ourselves about. To begin today, as a matter of fact, totally coincidental. No, actually, it's probably what stimulated this part of the show. My daughter is putting in an induction stovetop in her home. I'm helping her. I'm there right now. Tomorrow. So we're going to talk about the advantages of actually, I'm going to say, greening your home for a little bit. And then I have a few little natural study factoids I think that is a good time to update ourselves on. So why are we replacing gas stoves with induction stovetops? In our case, it's actually electric stove, which is even, the old ones especially aren't very efficient. Induction stoves use an electromagnetic energy to heat pots and pans directly instead of gas or electric cooktops, which heat indirectly either using a burner or some kind of a heating element. Induction stoves are more energy efficient. Some as much as little as 20, but some as much as 50% more, and provide just as much versatility for cooking while being faster, safer, and cleaner than gas or electric. When you buy an induction stove, all you have to do is literally, which we're doing, plug it in and use suitable pots and pans. We happen to be getting a whole stovetop, but you can buy individual induction cookers now. They used to be a few hundred dollars for the cheap ones. Now you can get a really good unit, well under $100. And one thing I like about it, being sort of a cooking nut, the temperature control is in some ways even better than gas. You have to at least guess at gas by the flame, and the heating elements of electric stoves are so hard to control. They slow to heat up, slow to cool down. But when you turn them off, they go away right away. You can set your induction cooker, literally, the current one I have goes from 120 degrees to 500 degrees in 10 degree increments. While we're on the subject of induction cooktops, I do want to bring up one caveat. Induction cooktops need induction-ready cookware. Even some of your fine all-clad and Cuisinart, they say they're 1810 stainless, and they are, but they only have an aluminum bottom, and they won't conduct through an induction cooker. But now all the companies, I just happen to be, as of, again, tomorrow, because we're bringing in an induction cooktop, bought a whole set of pots and pans. That'll last us for the rest of our lives, that they proudly announce now, because induction is becoming so popular, on the pan, usually on the bottom, it'll tell you if it's induction ready or not. So do be careful. Cooking vessels should be kind of flat on the bottom just to make it easy to use. And the way you can check them if you go to a store is just carry any kind of a magnet with you. Even the magnets that hold the little stickers on your refrigerator are fine. And you go, and if you don't want to even have to worry about reading them, I happen to carry a magnet in my watch pocket. And if it sticks to the bottom of the pan, you've got yourself an induction pan. No, since I have a heck of a collection of cast iron, that cast iron works perfectly, and so do most stainless steel, but there are a few that don't, so you don't want to have to get it and bring it back. But now basically all of them are marked induction ready or usable on induction stoves, so it's not so hard to figure out because they're becoming so popular. Why? Because they are so efficient. And finally, if you have a pot you just love, you want to keep it, you've had it for your mother owned it, by all means, they do make little what they call converters. You go buy it, it's a little flat plate that sits on your induction cooker, and then it lets that heat the pot. It's not quite as efficient, that's the negative. The good side is it even gives you in some way more, especially low temperature controls. I even do sous vide cooking on my induction cooktop, because once you get the temperature where it's set, a good induction cooktop will keep it within a degree or two. Well, while we're on the subject of efficiency, let's just talk a minute about purchasing energy-efficient appliances in general, which, of course, the induction cooker is part of. So if you're moving to a new home or just have to replace your appliances, consider researching the most energy efficient appliances. Now, there's a thing called a five-star or a blue star rating, five-star, and it is good. Unfortunately, it was at least temporarily canceled in the previous administration. Don't ask me why, but it's back on, and it was canceled. So for such a short time, most appliances you see still have an efficiency energy rating on them. Although, again, the crazy administration before this one canceled the idea that they had to do it. I don't know why. Not only do the newest of our appliances actually avoid greenhouse gas emissions, well, they're just more efficient. In the long run, you also save on water and electricity, and if they're built right, actually enhance the quality of your life. Estimates suggest that the typical household, listen to this, can save about 25% of their entire utility bill with energy efficient measures, such as going to the higher star rated appliances. One thing that my daughter brought up the other day that I found interesting, an ice maker in your appliance today, which a lot of us, when we get the new refrigerators, even though they say energy efficient, the ice maker uses about 20% of the electricity that it takes to run your freezer refrigerator. Think about that. I mean, most of us do like having our instant ice, but I didn't realize how inefficient they are. I now have, in my current older refrigerator, ice trays. I let them freeze, and when I think about them, I dump them in a container inside the freezer, freeze them again. Got plenty of ice. Don't have to pay for it. Don't have to drag it home. But anyway, there are guides. The guide is called EarthEasy.com. EarthEasy.com. And it'll give you a guide to all the various name brands, which ones are the most efficient, of course, the dimensions of them, so you'll know if they fit. Just if you got a reason, I don't know if you can justify just taking one out and putting a more efficient one in. Where that goes with the ecology, I don't quite have an answer yet. Well, if the one you take out gets reused, then are you just handing it to somebody else to be less efficient? I don't have a good answer on that. I always question that. But anyway, just to end this part of the Organic Matters show, I thought I'd bring that up. So it's sort of a refreshing change of what we're going to talk about, at least different. But it still has something to do with kind of taking a little better care of this place we live. The federal government owns and operates about 650,000 vehicles. 650,000, folks, well over 500,000. Among them are a couple hundred thousand passenger vehicles, about 80,000 trucks, 50,000 vans, just the federal government, 850 ambulances, and 225,000, listen to this, 250,000, basically, vehicles are operated by the Postal Service alone. Each year, these vehicles are driven over 4.5 billion miles. Think about that. And use about 400 million gallons of gasoline, producing at least 3.5 million tons of greenhouse gases. Well, the current administration signed an executive order just this past January, directing federal officials to come up with a plan for converting the entire fleet to clean and zero emission vehicles. According to a new report from the Atlas Public Policy, whatever that is, accelerating the push for electric vehicles in the federal fleet could save all of us, taxpayers, not millions, but billions of dollars. As you may realize, electric vehicles have lower fueling and maintenance costs as well as a smaller environmental impact. According to the report, the government could replace 40% of its light-duty vehicles and buses, not owned by the Postal Service, with cheaper plug-in alternatives pretty quickly by about 2025. And by 2030, can replace 97% of the vehicles with EVs for a lifetime savings of more than $1 billion overall. Furthermore, by 2025, it would be possible to replace nearly all mail trucks with EVs. That alone would save the taxpayer $2.9 or roughly $3 billion more. The federal fleet represents an opportunity to encourage transportation electrification to happen a heck of a lot more quickly than anybody else has tried to do it. Apart from the economic and environmental benefits, having an electric federal fleet would increase public awareness of the practicality and the benefits of just what all electric vehicles are offering us. There are current vehicles on the drawing board right now, folks, that are going to get 500 miles to a charge. There are already some out there, the newest Cadillac, the newest Ford 150 electric, the top of the line model, that already get a little over 300 miles on a charge. Oh yes, and incidentally, they're charging quicker and quicker all the time, and some of the newer chargers coming out are going to be even twice as efficient as the current chargers you can buy. This administration is also, in part of this bill that we're having so much trouble getting through, going to put tens of thousands of charging stations all across our nation. And if we do that, it's really not going to be much of a difference whether you're going in an electric or a gas car. Going to be quieter, going to be more efficient. But the actual total drive time, for instance, across the entire nation is going to be a few hours difference and a heck of a lot more comfortable. So consider it. Matter of fact, my family has ordered what's called a Ford Maverick pickup. They're hybrids and hybrid electrics. They do make it still a gas model, but Ford themselves even got fooled. They've got like five times the orders for the electric trucks they thought they would have. Unfortunately, with the situation we have right now with the COVID and not being able to get things, it's slowing down production a little bit from parts that were not made right here in the United States. But it's nonetheless the answer to the future as far as transportation has got to be in electricity. As usual, thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters. Find me on almost all podcasts, the local stations I'm on. You already know I'm there. Pick me up on Saturday mornings live. Otherwise, I'm available on demand on most all podcast channels. Thank you.